The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
All right, and this is episode 183.
March.
Yeah, we have no name. Oh, no.
Yes, we do. March.
Okay.
Forward March.
This is the first first episode we've recorded in March 2016. Right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. first one in March we've recorded here at the new place where we record, which I continue to love. It's very nice.
Yeah, Podcast Detroit. It's very nice. This is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
All right.
Who also thinks it's very nice.
Yes.
Podcast Detroit. They're very nice. We got a new slogan for them.
All right. And I think in previous podcasts we've already mentioned the beer bell.
They have a beer bell. Which, how can you go wrong with a beer bell?
Yeah. Well, beer belly.
Well, yeah, that has occurred.
That's where that leads to, just so you know. All right. Well, I guess, should we kind of catch up or?
Yeah, it seems like how we do
Want
things.
Me to kick it off?
Kick it off.
Sure, man.
Sure. Well, you know, a couple of things. I have been, looking for a laptop. I mean, not like looking around under cushions and things. I've been, in the market. No, it's actually in front of me running that beautiful, FreeBSD based distro. Or not distro, but system. Speaking of system, it's, System 76 is the, vendor that, I've been looking at. So, they have a relatively modestly priced, laptop. And so that's the one I've been looking at. We haven't made a decision yet, but, I'd be curious if you, Tom, you said that you've heard some good things about System 76. I've never bought anything from them before.
They're pretty favorable. I've seen some tours of their facility, which was all part of someone first heard they have good laptops, then went to they have a really cool place, and then that led me to the click hole of I found YouTube videos and projects they're working on, and they're just a neat company.
2 days later, you
were days later, not only do I know about their laptops, I know what their office looks like. They seem to be pretty well-reviewed and well-liked. So they seem to make a really good product based on the reviews. I have not had any actual experience with them. I switched over to getting, and Tony now has one today too, the HP EliteBook series, which is, I'm not a fan of anything consumer HP. I think they used to make great products. Now they make junk products.
Even their printers?
Unless you get into their business ones. Their business ones are good, but their consumer stuff is just, you know.
Right. Yeah, they went a little too cheap when they went to make it cheap for home users.
Yeah. I think they ruined their brand quite a bit by that. Because we actually have in my office, we have HP.
Should we blame Carly Fiorina for that?
No. Oh, she definitely had played a hand in it. you know, you want to, they started participating in the race to the bottom and making cheap products. And how, you know, if we can get our product in everyone's hands, everyone's using our product, it'll sell more of our business products, right?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Well, she needed something to finance those Botox shots. Oh, that was mean, Mary. That just came out. All right, I'll stop right now.
I still have. We were laughing. Mm-hmm. I have a old HP. I think it's a 2000 series printer. Mm-hmm. That's what we're using. We have one at my office that's just by my desk. I mean, that's a 17-year-old printer now. I think it was made in 1998, and it's 1998 or 99.
Yeah,
it still works. So. They made great products for it. Now, their Elite series, like their Pro series of their laptops, they're very heavy, solid construction. Design-wise, I really, really like it. And also for a laptop, it gives me the option to have an SSD drive and a spinning hard drive. And it's got two hard drive slots in a lot of the Elite books, so I can have my system boot fast and edit my videos.
I love those solid state drives.
I do too, but they're just
speedy.
They're really fast, but they're, unless you have a lot of money, you'll spend more on the drive than you will on the laptop to get one that has a lot of storage. Yeah. So being able to put a spinning drive in there and put a 500 gig or a terabyte drive in there, which you can pick up for, 500 gig drives, I think $49 now you can find them. So they're
really
so
cheap on Amazon.
So I've been a big fan of Elite Books, but System 76, back to them, they seem to have good reviews. People seem to like them. I do like the fact that they ship. you know, with Linux. So
yes, I think the only knock I have, and I'm going to check and confirm this, but it looks like Ubuntu. It appears that the distros you can get pre-installed on a System 76 laptop are somewhat limited, at least from the website. Now, I've not inquired, but what I'd want to do is get Kubuntu on it.
Yeah.
And I suspect they'll probably be able to do that. I'll find out, and then next time we're recording, I'll report back, because by that time I will have contacted them, gotten an answer, and then most likely ordered the laptop.
Yeah, and it's really new, and like I said, what I've been happy with the EliteBooks is they have out-of-the-box support for Linux, too. Mm-hmm. And so do a few of the Lenovos.
I'm sorry, we switched for talking IBM now.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, well, they have that secure boot thing.
Yes, yes.
Tony's over there whistling.
Yeah. Two-factor authentication.
That's the downside of excellent mics.
Right.
So anyway, but that's the one thing I was doing. The other thing is that I am going to be ordering the Raspberry Pi 3, which created quite a bit of excitement. I tried to order it this morning so I could say, hey, I've already ordered it, but the website was, I don't know, something's kind of crazy with it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You know, there's a project I'm thinking about doing with the Raspberry Pi 3.
Mm-hmm.
And
I had so many with my Raspberry Pi 2, you know.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's sad. I remember didn't I get two and I gave one to you or something?
Yeah, or I bought it from
you. Or you bought it, yeah. So anyway, but...
Well, you know.
The Raspberry Pi 3 has a lot more capabilities, so.
And let me guess, you're going to run out and load Windows 10 IoT on it, right?
You know, didn't Microsoft come out with an announcement that it's like a Windows preview something?
Yes.
I'm thinking Windows 10 preview.
Give me
a break.
And I looked a little into this, and, you know, it looks like you have to have a Windows 10 computer in order to create the image for your Raspberry Pi with Windows 10. It's not just a file you can download like it is with Linux.
Oh.
It also doesn't properly take advantage. And this was it could be that there's some new features that I'm unaware of.
Mm-hmm.
But the hacker community doesn't seem to like it. You have to use.
No surprise there.
Shocking, right? they expect you to use Visual Studio for it. It's got a weird web interface that you push information into it through. It doesn't seem to be a good experience.
You know, isn't that the way Microsoft always does things? They never really, I don't know. They just never really do it.
If only there was some example of how to do it right in a way that's popular.
Yeah, they do it the Microsoft way.
Yeah, I don't understand why they kind of went off the rails on it. I haven't tried the latest version.
So.
It was a slightly older version that I read a review on because I was curious. I wanted to see what they'd done. And
yeah, it makes sense.
I was not surprised. I was hoping to be surprised, but then I looked at it and all the complaints. I'm like, I guess, yeah, they did what I expected. They made a crippled device. Only if you have some vested interest because you have pre-written some type of basic scripts that would require an IoT device. I can't picture the scenario, but I'm trying to come up with one in my head. Like, you've got all these VB script for special functions that you're currently doing in a full-size desktop, and you go, man, I don't want to have to rewrite all this code. I want to port it over. Then I guess.
Yeah, I want to run my financial market software on Raspberry Pi.
Well, the other thing is that it's IoT only, so there's no, like, desktop for it.
Right. Yeah, you have to.
Oh, that's true.
So if you've written.
And for those who may not be familiar with the abbreviation IoT, that's
Internet of Targets. Oh, I mean, of things.
That was quick. I like that.
Internet of insecure things that get hacked all the time.
That's right. But anyway, that's the Internet of Things.
Yeah.
Technically.
So it's interesting. I don't know. You know what? That might be a good fresh look, because we have a Raspberry Pi and we did a project on. And
oh, that would be a good fresh look.
We got our Pi shredders, but I think it might be fun
later
to
in
list
March.
Out all the fun things. I mean, the guy that wrote the Comcast one, did you hear about that? It's a script you have for your Raspberry Pi, free open source, of course, and it doesn't run on Windows 10. Sorry. But it's a free open source script that you can load on Raspberry Pi, and you put in your Twitter information as well. So it runs a script to determine whether
or not. It tweets for you?
Yes, it does. It determines whether or not you're getting the speed you paid for from Comcast, and if you're not, it lets them know via Twitter and tweets their thing. So it's an auto tweeter.
That's funny.
Of course, lots of people.
I bet it was like a DDoS because everybody doesn't get what they ordered, right?
I have a feeling it's creating a tweet storm, I'm sure.
Oh, that's funny.
You know, these little boxes are just chirping away at them going, you're not giving me what we're paying for. We're letting you know. And this is all of a result of the Linux kernel admin who mm-hmm. got upset because Microsoft doesn't know how to measure bandwidth. And he proved it systematically.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think we talked about it a couple months ago. He was charged for overuse of bandwidth while he was out of the country. And he had taken...
Well, he had to quit running those torrents.
he unplugged his cable modem and did a time-lapse video with a timestamp on it and was auto-recording all of it to show them that not only was he not home, but his cable was unplugged, and they still said he went over bandwidth. He's like, you're not even measuring my account. You can't be. My cable modem is unplugged.
I smell a class action lawsuit.
Yes, because Microsoft's sending these people overbilling charges. A lot of people are complaining about them because they're mm-hmm. only, for now, like mm-hmm. $10 for going over. But if you can't measure the bandwidth properly, you can't charge people over.
You can't.
Yeah. I mean, that's very, very wrong.
Please, even I get that. Come on. So, okay, well, we finished with what I was doing and then some. All right. So who's next?
So, Tom, what did you do the last couple of weeks?
What did I do the last couple of weeks? Well, I finally graduated. I am now part of the Goldman Sachs Alumni for Business. Dun, 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 dun,
dun. We should have had some canned music, Tony.
What does that
Congratulations.
Mean? If there's any business owners listening and you've been in business at least 2 years and have a minimum of 2 employees.
Tom will consult with you.
I will consult with you. No, actually, you can apply for this free program. And the brief overview of the program would be it's a mini MBA program. And Goldman Sachs is basically giving this away for free because they want to see.
Mini and not micro.
Not micro. It's a MBA program that lasts, I forget how many classes, but there's not a lot of classes. It's pretty intense. The classes, I learned a lot.
I bet you did. Well, you're just gushing with excitement, Tom. Yeah. I can tell you learned a lot.
I am smarter now.
Well, you always were. I am not less you're even dumb. More smart. More smarter.
More smarter now. They did not have an English or linguistics class.
Hey.
But. It's a free program. You can look it up called Goldman Sachs 10K. It actually started as a women's program, where Goldman Sachs set out a goal to get 10,000, women entrepreneurs around the world mm-hmm. into business and help them start companies.
And, you know, that's what Hillary Clinton, when she gave those speeches at Goldman Sachs, that was some of the stuff that she talked about was their diversity and for all the grousing about her speeches to Goldman Sachs, that was one of the main topics that she had covered during the course of those speeches.
And I actually read into this. You can look into it. They actually went over to some of the Middle Eastern nations, and mm-hmm. they have helped diversity there. They have helped women start businesses. So for the evil empire that a lot of people perceive, Goldman Sachs, and I'm not denying any of them for being wrong, for maybe they've made some choices at Goldman Sachs that did not fit well with public.
Well, it's a different division. Let's just say that the financial division that bet against their own clients, that's the evil part. And they do some good things.
Well, they took advantage of the system that they helped create. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that is what it is. On a good note, some of that money has gone to programs like this. And they're absolutely free. If you qualify, there is nothing you pay for this. That included the whole women's program. I mean, they really helped a lot of women. And something I could tell because statistically, I know women own less businesses. I'm in a class that was almost 50% women. For the small business class. Even though this is anyone with a business can qualify, mm-hmm. there was a lot of diversity class, which is nice. It was not a bunch of people like me at all. It was mostly, it's a lot of small business owners and there's a lot of women owned businesses, which is really cool. So you have a good diversity in there. They're doing everything for free, which is pretty cool. So that was the culmination of these last few months that I've been going through the class that I graduated. And that's one thing. Back to my...
Well, we expect to see you on Forbes Listen within about two or 3 years.
I should have done it when I was younger because, you know, I'm too old to make the 30 under 30.
Oh, yeah.
And now I'm 40, so I didn't make that list either.
All right. Well, we'll try for the under 50.
Other than that, I'm excited about PenguinCon coming up. So I'm going to be speaking at PenguinCon. I'm working on what all the details and panels and what mm-hmm. we're all putting together. But there's going to be some hands-on Linux workshops. Going to teach people some Linux experience. Mm-hmm. And we're thinking about, because it's going to be 2-hour workshop. So we're still putting together all the details of what we can cram in there for the educational piece. And I'm also talking to see if I can help out with maybe doing some loading and other Linux Q&A. Mm-hmm. I want to bring people away from the Microsoft. And I kind of want to make this a series of finding equivalent programs that are on Microsoft and how you can translate that over into Linux.
Oh, yeah, there's some really solid programs, as we all know.
Yeah.
And then you can also tell them how Windows 10 spies on them, and that'll really help them come
over.
Well,
that's the best thing. The world has already been complaining about that, so that's why they're seeking Linux. So.
I think wasn't and not to digress. Well, I'm going to anyway, but wasn't there some posting about Microsoft? I think the Windows 10 not screensaver screen or something. It just starts to post ads or something. I mean, it just popped into my head, so I'm not prepared to really speak intelligently about it. But I recall some kind of ad popped up in a spot that you weren't expecting an ad to pop up. And, I mean, that's the Windows 10
effect. There's so much little things in there. Windows 10 is actually, I probably shouldn't say this, but it's not horrible function-wise.
Like, no.
I think they've got the interface looking so much better than
It's the way 8 should have been.
It's really what 8 should have been. Mm-hmm. It's more thought out. I think they've done a nice job. I love the way they've copied a lot of the things I've been used to in Linux for a long time that are now in Windows 10. And that's why I come from that approach where I'm like, hey, look, they have features that I was used to for years in Ubuntu that have now come over. So just like the interface and the way things move around, the snapping windows. So they're making those improvements, but some of the underlying stuff is just, what it is.
So what else did you do?
Yes, what else did I do? that's really about it.
All right. Well, that's pretty big, though, to graduate like that.
Yeah.
Did you graduate like magna cum laude?
No, they don't have
magna cum business plan.
Yeah, magna cum business.
You got your business plan in there.
Now I have to do the hard part of implementing it, which I've already started. So we're going to be expanding my company. We're probably going to open a second office in Detroit. We're looking at different spaces for all that and putting it together. So
downtown?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, Dan Gilbert, I mean, he's very much, I think pro-entrepreneur and all of that. So
Uncle Dan is pro-entrepreneur.
But so I'm sure you'll find space in Gilbertville.
I think Gilbert is also very pro-money. So
yeah.
And he's making safe bets. He's been buying up a lot of buildings on there. He's invested heavily in companies like Rocket Fiber. And so they're lighting up Detroit. Detroit's a weird market. There's not many other major cities that have two fiber companies in the same area competing. So Detroit is getting lit up with fiber.
It's because we were so decimated. It's like laying the cable from ground one or laying the fiber.
So there's a lot of good things going on down there. And I've already gone to a couple business events in Detroit, entrepreneur events. I mean, we are a hotbed of entrepreneurship. There was an article in Cranes. We are now one of the best places for women to seek jobs in tech because it generally pays.
Cool.
I think they said 120% more for women in tech.
They want to have a pretty face around.
Yeah.
That's probably why I can't get a job.
And I won't lie. We were at a tech entrepreneur meetup, and it was probably half women with ideas to start businesses.
Cool.
So they don't feel encumbered. They feel comfortable. And there's so many of them. I love it. It's like, so now we're finally getting the other half in there. So.
Good. All right. Well, thanks, Tom. That was very informative, as always. So they're Mr. Stoic over there.
Right. No. You know, the other thing with Detroit and tech is, aren't we the number two to Silicon Valley for how much tech is in the area?
Yes.
And people employed.
So. Can you believe it? A Rust Belt city like Detroit.
And
actually, Detroit's
fast.
Got a lot of good stuff going on.
There's another side of it. They've told some of the people, because some of these program companies open here, they admit they're paying them a lot less than they pay there's a couple programming companies based out of Silicon Valley that have opened here. They're paying their engineers less. They admit to it. But they said the cost of living is so much lower. So when they give you an $80,000 a year job here, you're like, hoo-hoo. And you're like, yeah, my counterpart makes $120 over in Silicon Valley, but the cost of living is so much more expensive.
Right.
Where was that?
Was
out in California?
Yeah, California, because the cost of living is so high in Silicon Valley, so the cost of living is so cheap here.
Mary, I think she's trying.
I'm pranking you, Tom.
Except Silicon.
Oh, Silicon. I am slow.
The
I'm
silicone
only halfway
stuff
in my coffee.
I believe the silicone stuff is about 500 miles south there in LA, isn't it?
Yeah, LA is the actual Silicon.
I'm so sorry. All right.
Anyways.
Bad Mary came out again.
Mary's on a roll this morning.
Yeah, I tell you. I don't know what was in that coffee.
Yeah.
But it was a little metal flash. That's all I know. So anyway,
back to Tony.
So Tony, what else?
Stuff's going on. I don't know. Busy.
School. What's going on?
School.
Busy.
School.
Birthday, school.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Family. It's.
Did you build a server or anything? No, you're actually, hesitating, you probably didn't.
No, I'm working on that project. I don't meet with my professor a whole lot, so.
Oh, okay.
You know, the stuff I'm doing, I'm just working along and.
Mm-hmm. What about Tuesday?
This Tuesday is my mug presentation, and we're doing it on offensive security and countermeasures with Kelly.
Are you going, Tom?
I think so.
Where is that?
You should go. It's in
Farmington.
Farmington, 12 Mile and the Farmington Library.
Okay.
12 Mile and...
Does it cost money to go?
No, it's free to show up. if you want to be a member, you know...
Free to show up, a dollar to sit. If you want a chair.
No.
That's a good idea.
No fees.
Oh. All right. Five if you want. If you want arm things on it. Okay. All right. I'm very sorry. All right.
No, the only thing that if you want to be part of the drawing at the end, you need to be a member, I believe.
Oh, okay.
But other than that,
and they give away books. Okay.
Yeah, books and other random stuff. There's.
I wonder if they'll have Michael Lucas's book, FreeBSD Mastery Specialty File Systems.
Oh yeah, you're gonna be talking.
I've been
about
reading
that,
about that. Huh? Yeah, I think in our upcoming Fresh Looks episode, I will be.
Sweet. Yeah. No, they're not going to be giving that away, but
not this
it'll be. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's I don't know. I'm still working on the presentation. This morning I was tweaking it. That's why we were a few minutes late starting.
Oh.
We have multiple excuses why we're late.
Yeah.
It was like a convergence of bad ideas, like Tom forgetting the laptop and leaving a couple minutes late and.
Yeah, and I thought I was running around so I wouldn't be late, and I was here a half hour before you guys even got here. I felt good now. No, that's fine. We're good. We're good because last time I thought we were recording at 8. Still, I screwed that up. But anyway, we're moving on.
Yeah.
So.
So that's been my last couple weeks.
Okay. Well, I think what we need to do is kind of. Wow, the show's half over. Hey, we got to catch up on some listener feedback, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
Cool. All right.
What do you have? Did you guys find anything for the last couple weeks?
Yes. Prophis. Two got a hold of us. I don't know if did, I think when I responded, I included, show@smlr.us so you guys could keep up with, you know, that conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
I believe I had talked about, app permissions on my Android phone. You remember that a couple of episodes ago? And, what he wanted to do was to make us aware of, something called, SRT App Guard. And, he then provided a link to it. I guess it's out of Germany. And it will allow you to manage permissions. It apparently was in the Google Plus Store, or not Google Plus Store, but the Google Play Store for a very short period of time. Then it was removed for obvious reasons because it allowed you to, I guess, have more control over what apps did. So if it's just a flashlight app, there's no reason why it needs your list of contacts.
Right.
That type of thing. And, he, according to what Prophis told me, he said it debuted in the Google Play Store in 2012. And according to press reports, after one day it was removed from the store. But if you go to the, App Guard website, you can, download the, APK. So. Mm.
All right. It says that it's dynamic, permission management for apps without rooting your device.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, that just seems like a really, that seems like the thing I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't want to just, if something legitimately needs access to the wireless network, then it should have that. But if it's, you know, I mean, the great example is the flashlight app that wants access to everything. And I was talking about, I know what it was, my neighborhood app that, the guy that created it basically sent it through a conversion utility that took the iPhone app and converted it to an Android app. So apparently iPhone had all these permissions and,
it just wanted to assume.
And he admitted that, you know, that he was sloppy on his part to do that.
You have individual granular permissions in the latest version of Android, too. That's a feature with the phone you have now.
Oh, you know, I'm going to have to look into that.
It gives you the, yeah. It's funny if you And maybe this gives more control than that does, but I really liked it because it has, it asks you, do you want to allow this program to do this, this? And you can even keep the program working and say no to those things, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that is nice.
I did have a weird problem with it. I use Google Keep for my geographic note reminders, and it was kept failing, and I don't know why, and this is an Android phone out of the box, and I never said no. Google Keep was defaulted to not allowed to use the satellite permissions, like location permissions. I had to go in there. But you can go into each app and then turn things. Even if you turned it off, you can go back later and turn them back on.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the way it should be.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know why Google didn't come up with it sooner. Of course, here we are. They made something cool, and now we're still – you didn't
we're
do it
still,
soon enough.
We're still complaining.
That's how it works in tech. Even if you make us the best product, we want to know why we didn't have the best product when we first got it.
Yeah. So anyway, and so there was that. And then also, we got I think you guys probably saw, we got a note from, Handy Linux. I guess the folks at Handy Linux.
Mm-hmm. Ying. I think it's from Ying.
Yan.
Y-A-N. Yeah.
Yes. Just to, I think it was just to let us know about Handy Linux. What he probably doesn't realize is I think I reviewed Handy Linux maybe a year or two ago. But it he just indicates that it's a French-English distro for newbies in the Debian way of life, not Ubuntu derivative, pure blend of Debian with personal repo. And then he then thanked us for reading him, so reading it. So anyway, But yeah, we reviewed it. I think, as I recall, I found it to be a very serviceable distro. So.
All right.
Because I think it had the hand with a little Debian swirl on it, as I recall.
Oh yeah. So, I agree.
Anyway, those were two that I had noted. Any other feedback that you guys have got?
I don't see any. I'm looking through on the website right now and I don't see any there.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I guess that must wrap it up.
Yeah. Well, is it count as feedback that we made a list? They emailed us.
Oh, yeah. They did email us. Yeah. We made in the top seven list of podcasts that all Linux users should listen to. We were number five.
There are a total of seven, right? No.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
They're all listed. Yeah.
Yeah. But we weren't number seven.
Right. We were number five.
Yeah. You know,
we did not know the person.
And we need to change our name to Us Sunday Morning, because then if they start it alphabetically, we'll be at the top.
Yeah. Uh-huh. There we go. But yes, we made a list.
Or AAA Sunday.
Moving up in a row.
Yeah. That was kind of cool.
Yeah. That was exciting.
Just goes to show, Tom, you've classed up the act.
I've classed up the act. I'm trying.
So yeah, we got that one and that was it, I think.
Yeah, well, the website, what's that URL? It's
foss.com,
I think. It's foss.com/Linux.
Linux-podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be in the show notes. Cool.
Yeah, thanks for posting in the chat, Tony.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do a better job of monitoring it.
All right. So we're going on to
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
Boy, that's that really got me excited there, just listening to that.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa. And actually, I am excited about several here. The one I'm really excited about is FreeBSD. You know, as you know, FreeBSD just released their third. It's their first release candidate. I'm behind. That just was released yesterday. So that can only mean one thing: before the end of the month, we're going to have a new FreeBSD 10.3 release. So I'm very much looking forward to that. They're just working out all the little minor things that they typically work out.
Yeah. So. And then Solus 1.1 was released. Mm-hmm. So you did that. You did the review a month or two ago about Solus.
Yes. Remember in the partitioning problem, I am willing to bet, I didn't have time to take a look at this, but I'm willing to bet they got that fixed. As you recall, I couldn't create a separate home partition, and I was groused about that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I wasn't the only one who complained. There were several complaints about it, which to me seemed like a very basic thing that you should be able to do. But you know what? Something happened and now they fixed it, I bet. So.
Yeah.
You know, the other one too that I was noting here was Netrunner. The thing about Netrunner that I really like, and they also note it here. Well, first of all, they released this version, the rolling version without the KDE PIM package or suite. And I've never been a user of the KDE PIM suite. That's KMail and, the contacts and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of personal information. Not personal information, but it's just that kind of contact management, all that stuff.
Right.
I've never liked it because I think they run some services in the background that, used to slow down my computer. So that was why I hated it. But, what they're doing now is they're making it an option. If you want to install it, you can, but they release it, Netrunner's releasing it without it. And, Netrunner, one, interesting thing about them too that, because I went to their site and took a look at this. They've got two versions. They've got the rolling version, which is based on Arch, I think it's Manjaro, I believe it is.
Mm.
And which is based on Arch, so it kind of, you know, all those paths lead back to Arch Linux. And then they've got their other version, which is Kubuntu based, or you know, Debian Kubuntu based, which is not a rolling release, which is released on a more of a schedule. So
yeah.
It's interesting that they have some distros have two like that. One's a rolling release and one is more of a scheduled, but then, they're both based on the same underpinnings.
Yeah, normal R, but
yeah,
this
these
being
guys,
on two different distros,
yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting that they've really kind of gone in two separate, it's almost like they're covering their bases. I mean,
right.
They want to, which I, you know, sounds fine to me.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good idea because mm-hmm. somebody that likes Arch and they want to be on a rolling release,
mm-hmm.
This would be ideal for them.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you want to be a KDE user too,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's right up your alley.
Yep.
Where, I think normal Manjaro is, isn't that, the old version of GNOME or, what's like a Mate, if I remember right. Or,
yeah.
I could be wrong, but it might be just GNOME and they have a Mate version.
Yeah, what they've done here though is they've released, this Manjaro, based is using the KDE Plasma desktop, which I have to admit is getting better and better with each update that I get. When it first came out, I had tuned KDE 4 it was tuned so perfectly to the way I worked and everything. I loved it. And then 5 came out and it was a step backwards and I was crabby about it, but I just thought I'm just not going to get too crabby. It'll come along, and it's really starting to come along nicely.
All right.
So, anyway, yeah. But that Netrunner was the other one that I was in a fever over.
Yeah, you know, I saw a couple that interest me. One is the Porteous Kiosk.
Porteous mm-hmm. Kiosk. Yeah, I saw that.
That's been released. I never have a use case to put it into use,
mm-hmm.
but I always.
So you're not going to open a web cafe and,
right.
Hey, Tom, there's your business. There's your business name.
Web cafe
and use Porteous Kiosk.
Well, that's, you should throw a couple of these in your downtown office.
Yeah.
And then when
yeah.
people are coming by, they can get online and check their mail. And then you say, hey, while you're over here, why don't you check out this and
yeah.
this? And
yeah. Yeah.
Or and they can bring their computer in to get a fix.
And Tony and I'll come, we'll come down there and we'll be shells. You know, we'll just act like we're just there to do that.
Right.
And we'll say, hey, if you use these guys, they're great.
Yeah. But it's really cool because it's a web kiosk distro mm-hmm. and all it does is the web. So
yeah.
It's neat.
I like that. Yeah. You know, I don't see it in the list here, but, Gallium, which is the Chrome replacement for, Chrome OS replacement on the Chromebooks is, in its 1.0 release now.
Ooh, Gallium.
Yeah. Mm.
I don't know if I've heard of that one.
I might. Even
it rings a bell, but that's about it.
Yeah,
just a small bell going off in the back of my mind.
What usefulness does it have? And it's basically a replacement operating system for Chromebook. And
okay.
One of the things I like about it is so you can run a full Linux, essentially running a full Linux distribution with Chromium instead of actual Chrome. So as they call it, de-Google filing the Chromebook. But mm-hmm. I really like the Chromebooks for their hardware, and they're inexpensive because there's no Windows licenses. And I want to say they may or may not be subsidized by Google because there's no OS expense. And you can, like the laptop right here, it's a 1080 screen with an 8-hour battery life, and you can pick mm-hmm. these up for a couple $100.
Wow.
So it's kind of a neat concept to be able to run yeah. a full-blown Linux OS on there. Because
which model is yours?
CB35 Toshiba Chromebook 2.
It's so thin.
there, this thing weighs ounces. The reviews on this laptop are really
everybody
good.
Who's listening, he was spinning it around. Tony and I were talking about Netrunner and all that. Tom was sitting there spinning his laptop around, this little netbook thing, and it was like he could balance it on, you know.
One finger.
one finger, it weighs ounces.
So I really like it. It's very much similar, but of course it's plastic through the MacBook Air, but it's also sure. $200 now instead mm-hmm. of, but you know, you can run a full blown Linux distro on there, which is Gallium. And I was double checking on the bottom of this, so I was spinning around for a purpose, not to show how light it was.
I could tell you where.
I wanted to see if the model supported, and it looks like all of the Toshiba models are supported. Mm-hmm. This is one of the best Chromebooks you can buy is the Toshiba one, unless you go into that for the price.
Yeah, I used to not buy Toshiba because I just didn't like, I didn't think they handled, and this goes back 8-9 years. I just didn't think they handled Linux as well as.
They didn't.
Right. And so that's why, Dell and HP right. and those, I gravitated toward.
I had a Toshiba with a problem because they used a software program to spin the fan. Mm-hmm. And you could, if you loaded Linux, you would fry the processor.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Yes.
I had one of those. Yes. Then someone had an open source solution for it. But if you didn't know, you just loaded Linux and were all happy, then you would bring your CPU up.
I'm melting.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting though. So it opens up an option and because you can, that's a new price for a couple $100 for mm-hmm. these. I may even look around and see if I can't find a used one of these and mm-hmm. load it on there. Test to see how good it works.
Yeah, just listening to you talk about that makes me want to go out and buy a computer. Oh, you know, one thing I wanted to mention, and I don't know, stop me if I said this during our last Distro Fever. The guy that, you know, HTOP, they released 2.0 earlier this year. And the guy that developed HTOP, which is, I use it, you use it, it's pretty good. He is the same guy that is the project lead or the developer of Gobo Linux. Did I mention that here?
I think so.
Oh, I did. Okay, forget it then.
No, that's still pretty neat, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we can stop talking.
I have a whole Linux distro, and I develop HTOP.
Yeah.
This is diversity. All right.
I had talked about it to somebody, and I couldn't remember where that was, but obviously it was here. So we'll move on.
Yeah. But nonetheless, the list of Chromebooks they support is pretty mm-hmm. big, so, mm-hmm. and you can find, especially some of the older model Chromebooks, I think it works for some of those. They're very inexpensive and have good battery life, like the Acer C7 series. They're still usable, good little surfing boxes for that,
yeah.
so.
Yep.
Something else to play with.
Cool.
Pretty neat.
All right, well I think that, you know, the one final thing too on, Distro Fever, the other one I've got my eye on too, of course, is Chakra Linux and, Tom, this was before you joined the podcast, but a few years ago, I was running Chakra for a while. It stems from Arch. At least that's where it came from originally. But it always ran cutting edge KDE stuff. And, I ran that for a while and then I kind of drifted back to Debian based stuff. But, they named this release after, in memory of Ian Murdoch. But Chakra is another one I kind of like.
All right. You know, the last one I saw on there that looked interesting is OpenELEC. And OpenELEC is it's a distro.
You use that, don't you?
Yeah, I did. But it's a distro that for like embedded devices for media
stuff. Media.
So, yeah, there's one with
did you put it on a Raspberry Pi?
Right, Raspberry Pi and XBMC, where it's all configured and ready to go. You just, you know, throw the image onto a thing and boot it up and you can start watching videos. You know,
wow.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. And they have more, images for than just Raspberry Pi. But this update has the full support for Raspberry Pi 3. And, the neat thing about Raspberry Pi 3 is it has,
everything.
Well, it has wireless LAN and Bluetooth built into it now. So you don't have to get
for
a separate.
$35.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome.
It's shocking.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's shocking in a good way.
Yeah. Well, and as processing power becomes less and less expensive, that's really, it's not just software. People have known, and we're getting better at writing good software, but as the processing power comes available, they can do more and more things with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
You know, one thing I want to look into is there a Plex, an easy Plex plugin for XBMC, or what is it? Kodi. That's the name of mm-hmm. it now. Yeah, I've heard there was, but I heard it was really bad for user experience. It wasn't very easy.
was it command line? No.
You know, I'm using Plex with my Chromecast, and I'm really impressed with it. So yeah. It's like it does work so smooth.
Yeah, I really liked it. We got a Roku. Also, that's what happened the last couple of weeks. We got a Roku, and I put the Plex app on that. It's not bad. It's not as easy as doing it from your phone or from a web interface.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when you have a bunch of videos or TV shows and stuff in it, then you have to start using the search feature. Mm. And as long as that's available and you know what you're looking for, then it makes it much easier. Good. Yeah.
That's what I like about with the phone is because you use the phone to control the Chromecast, so you're searching everything on your phone to play the videos. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, searching and the filtering is really nice because you can filter by either recently added or by...
And you can watch Netflix stuff on there and Hulu and all that too? Or is that just...
On the Roku you can. Okay. Yeah, yeah, not in Plex, but on Roku. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, so. I'm watching the Lizzie Borden Chronicles. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't think I've heard of that one.
Oh, well, it's not for children. I'll just tell you that.
Oh, all right.
I might look it up then.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's a wonder there'll be anybody left by the end of it. If that make, that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to do a spoiler alert, but I almost did there.
All right.
So, all right. So that was Distro Fever. Wow, that was Distro Fever and then some.
All right, now going on to
Tech News and Views.
Okay. So,
Tech News.
Well, this is from the, okay, I use my last fork in the silverware drawer department, and that's SCO's, SCO's legal war against IBM and Linux comes to an end, a real end.
A real end.
Ooh.
And Tom, I know we talked a little bit about this.
Yes, that lawsuit started in 2003, and SCO was the company that Microsoft had really close ties with and donated money to sue people to stop them from using Linux, because when you can't innovate, you litigate. So that was the solution they had, and it scared people for years and was a thorn in the side of the open source community. We're happy to see them go away.
Yes. Good riddance. Although, if 5 years worth of time passes and nothing happens, we see nothing more on this, and I'll believe it's really dead.
Mm-hmm.
The ghost of, but no, it's, that thing finally ended. The other thing I wanted to mention, this is something we talked about, and this was the, Amazon, they killed their file encryption, with their latest Fire OS update, because apparently they've got a way, of measuring how often things get used, on their various, tablets. And so no one was using it, and they decided to do away with it. But I think, as you aptly noted, nobody was using it because
it made it really slow. My understanding, and I don't have one, I just was listening to people who owned them had comments, and a lot of it was about how slow the file system was with encryption. They did not have a dedicated chip for encryption like a lot of the other ones do. And most of the phones now, Apple and Android phones, come with encryption out of the box. The Nexus series from Google directly has come with encryption out of the box for a long time. But they both, just like Apple, there's a hardware chip that keeps the encryption fast. So they have a dedicated ASIC encryption chip that just handles all the file system encryption.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what, my first thought was the government thing that...
Some people sent some quick clickbait headlines that Amazon gives up fight against government. I seen that. I'm like, I didn't know they were fighting with them. And they said by surrendering encryption and not encrypting people's stuff. And I'm like,
no, that's not the,
Yeah, that's not it.
It's because people weren't using it because it was slow. And so, of course, they just removed it because of lack of use.
Yeah. It was just a lack of use scenario. And I don't know that people store as much personal information on their Kindles. I mean, granted, there's the book list, but anything that's on your Kindle, encrypted or not, as the infamous early days of the Amazon was, like with the books, when Amazon lost the right to books, but you had already purchased the book, they could actually go back in and remove it. That has that Kindle is not a very independent device. It's extremely reliant on Amazon services to work, or it's a brick. So, encrypted or not, all your stuff's in real time sync with Amazon. Anything you have on there is because Amazon knows you have it. Mm-hmm. Right. So.
Yes.
I don't really think it's as much a, secure issue.
Yes.
I agree.
And then the last one that I have is people who've been around Linux a long time remember Zimian and Miguel Diacaza, who developed that as a way. It was supposed to be a kind of an open source response. Well, actually, Zimian itself developed what was that? Evolution, I think that mail. Tony, you use it. Evolution, the email.
Oh yeah, the email client.
Yeah, they and he was one of the founders of the GNOME project. But he came up with, I think it was Moonlight, as an open source answer to Microsoft Silverlight, as I recall, or their .NET environment. I'm just kind of dropping these terms willy-nilly, so don't flame me anyway.
Moonlight is the open source version of Silverlight, and
Mono, I never could get it to work right. And Mono
is the open source version of .NET.
And I had problems getting that stuff to work very, very well and very efficiently. It was like it was a couple versions behind, which is understandable because the original had to be released, and then you try to open, you know, just develop an open source version. So there was always this lag. Anyway, I mentioned this because he went on to join, to found Xamarin. And Microsoft just bought them. And Xamarin is, they're a developer of mobile apps and based out in San Francisco. And they were just acquired by Microsoft.
Oh, yeah.
So,
are they, Mono or .NET based stuff? Because I heard the other day that that Microsoft is trying to make .NET they've already open sourced the developer tools for it. Mm-hmm. But they're trying to make that the new write once, run anywhere, kind of like Java is. You write it once, and then there's Java Virtual Machine on all sorts of platforms. Mm-hmm. They're trying to do that with .NET now, with open sourcing it and having it available on.
Oh, that's interesting.
On iPhones and on Android phones and Linux computers and Microsoft computers.
I hadn't heard that part of it.
Yeah. No, it seems interesting. But
yeah, it does. I'll be very curious to see how that turns out.
Yeah.
Anyway, but those are just the news items that kind of caught my eye. Cool. In addition to, you know, whatever you guys find.
Right. Now, the one thing I see that I heard a little bit of teaser on Security Now, they were talking about it, but he didn't go into a deep dive on it, is the new Drown vulnerability for SSL v2. And
Drown?
Yeah, DROWN.
This is the Drown attack.
Yeah, it's encrypting RSA with obsolete and weakened encryption.
Because you can't have any cool hacks without a logo, a website, and a cool name.
Right.
Heartbleed. Drown.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they say it's not getting as much press, and it's not as bad as Heartbleed, but it's still a downgrade attack.
It's funny because it's one of those things, I was in the forums right away, and I'm like, isn't this an expired protocol that it's attacking? They're like, yeah. And a lot of the banking industries, they've disabled that protocol years ago.
Okay.
Like, so, but it is an attack because a lot of people just say, what protocols do you want? Well, I don't want anyone not to be able to access my website. So all the protocols. Yeah. So someone finally, and it was bound to happen that an older protocol, they would figure out a way to do a downgrade attack and do it. And they found flaws in, I think it was a 7-year-old protocol or 8 years.
Something like that. Okay. Like,
that may as well be 100 years old in web technology.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're still running an SSL, then move on. It's because SSL is the old. TLS is the new encryption. It's still HTTPS. It's encryption.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's much more secure than SSL. So
that's move on.
There's very little people, if any, that are still using it. It's considered dead now.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I know you really want to support those Windows XP people and Windows 98 people that come to your website.
Windows 98.
But it's time.
Oh, you know, there's some JavaScript app out there that allows you to run Windows 98 in a browser.
In a browser.
I did. Oh, yeah. I fired it up.
I did too.
That's funny.
I relive my nostalgic Windows 98.
Oh my gosh. And I checked to see what version of Internet Explorer was in there. Internet Explorer 5.
Oh.
So it was a trip down memory lane.
I remember the big upgrade to Internet Explorer 6. Ooh, that was exciting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that too.
We'll have a reminiscent fresh looks sometimes.
Oh, you know, that'd be kind of fun.
You know, someone did a really fun review of some of the really early versions of Linux. Someone loaded and did like a full-blown OS review of like, I think it was Ubuntu 5 or 4.
Really?
It was really cool. And they did it just like they do a normal distro review. And I thought it was really clever because it was neat to see how far we've come.
Yeah.
Some
yeah.
of it was me going, I remember when I had to suffer through that. and then,
oh,
you know,
I can't get wireless.
It was so hard for me to tell people, this is the future. Tom, that looks awful. And why does it keep crashing on you?
Right.
Why do you keep opening up a terminal to close it?
Yeah.
I don't care that your windows can wiggle.
That was cool though.
That was cool. That
wobbly
was
cool.
Wobbly windows, which I still have enabled.
Yeah.
Yes. I always modify my Ubuntu installation to make the windows wobble.
That's cool.
It's a throwback thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back to the news. Do you have more news, Tony?
Yeah. You know, a few, I don't know, a month or two ago, we talked about the Cisco had a backdoor flaw that, you know, as all the other backdoors were coming out, Cisco was also found that they had some in their Nexus, switches, and they have a fix for that. So,
oh, good.
Yeah, make sure you get your updates done. Although usually Nexus 3000, 3500 series, that's like the core of your network, so it's kind of hard to just to throw in a new update. You have to do a lot of testing and make sure everything works right.
Yeah, that's always scary.
Right, but if you have the money to run a Nexus switch, you should have a lot more security between you and the internet.
Hope so.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think that was about it.
Well, I'm ready.
Yeah.
So are we. Buckle your seatbelts, Tony.
Buckle your seatbelts. I still keep up with, and I don't play a lot of games, so I still keep up with the gaming news. And I was a huge fan forever of MAME.
Oh.
The multi-arcade machine emulation.
Yes.
Yes.
I saw that. I'll let you keep
now,
going.
They have been technically kind of open source for a long time. So saying MAME is now free, people are going, wait a minute, it's always free. They got GPL. And they had they had their own, previously licensed, and it would keep them from allowing to produce cabinets and things like that. So people who wanted to really get into main manufacturing of the machines and hardware, the ROMs are still a whole nother issue. Where
when
you
say cabinets, you're not talking cab files, you're talking physical
cabinets like the old school arcade machines.
Okay.
And a lot of people have built them, but there's, doing it commercially becomes very tricky because of the way the license works. This will open up, actual production of some of these.
And do you know what license they're using?
BNS and D.
Yes, they are.
Yes, they are.
The BSD license.
All right.
Yes. So they have a BSD-style license, and they have this is going to open up an opportunity because so there have been some kits based on Raspberry Pi and others.
I was just thinking that. Saying, yes. Oh, that's what I could use. I could just create this.
And they can get the images, but this is where –
get out a saw and a hammer and make a cabinet.
Well, there's actually some really cool maker kits that you can get the cabinets. And there's sticker kits you can get for them. Look them up. And then they base them off Raspberry Pi.
I will.
So it creates basically something that's a tabletop – arcade machine. Yeah. And this has been a project I've been wanting to build. I'm going to build one this summer, get my kids involved to try and hopefully.
Oh, what a great summer project.
Yeah.
Keeps them out of trouble.
And they like video games. This just seems like a win-win. So, pretty cool. This is going to, may open up some more commercial opportunities for people who want to sell them.
Does it have a utility for adding a coin thing so that you can?
Yeah.
There's business opportunity for yours.
Oh, there's really cool kits that have been made on this. I spent a lot of time out there. It's really, really neat. They have entire boards for the, joystick and emulating it. It's really cool.
Now that I have more time on my hands, I should look into that.
And it's fun because I love those old games. And it's got a button to emulate the quarters.
Was it Galaga? Is that one?
Yes, Galaga. I love Galaga. That game.
Okay.
Put that right next to your internet kiosk. And then you have lots of people coming in.
Think about it.
I could sit and play Gauntlet forever.
Oh.
And I love that game. That's still one of my go-tos when I travel. That's the only time I really play any games is when I travel.
Frogger.
Yeah. I get out the old emulator games, play them. So nonetheless, MAME is free now, which is great.
Yeah.
There's another project called Shash, S-H-A-S-H-L-I-K, Shashlik. I'm horrible at pronouncing things. Someone correct me if it's pronounced differently. It is a open source program to bring.
It sounds all right to me.
Sounds all right. It's a open source solution to bring Android apps on your Linux desktop. So it's still...
It's like a little emulator?
It's an emulation, okay. So you can load the apps on there, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a chance to play with it. Looks like there's not 100% compatibility with some of the apps. Some work, some don't. But it's a cool concept. And mm-hmm. I think it'd be kind of neat because if you have Ubuntu phones, which I'm hoping we're going to see at some point, some open source phones,
yeah.
But I still have that killer Android app.
Okay.
I can then pop open that and run those within a session within.
Sure.
And that allows you to very much sandbox and control what the Android apps have. So I think that conceptually, I like where it could be going with this. And it might just be cool to have a window opened up because I really like the way some of the apps work. I wish the web interface, rare you say this, but I look at the way certain apps and I go, you know, I wish the web interface was as nice as the app is.
Oh, yeah.
And mm-hmm. so that might be where I have a whole other window and just run that over there on my Linux desktop. I'm going to do some playing with it and testing to see how good it is. My understanding is it doesn't run all the apps, but they're getting there. And guess who bought an SSL certificate? Linux Ooh. Mint.
Linux Mint.
Linux
yeah,
Mint.
February 23rd, they made a purchase. He did a good blog post that they're going to be focused more on security. They're mitigating it. They're doing this. He's got a list of steps you can go read on the blog.
Yeah, it was pretty embarrassing.
It's embarrassing, but he did write on it.
But he did, yeah. Exactly.
He fessed up to it. He, you know, said this needs to be done, this be done. So that's then.
And that'll be, I think that's what people will be left remembering is that, yeah, it happened, but He took care of it right away, so.
Yes.
And with a new effort on being security focused, I mean, that just means more good things.
Yes, I like that. So he said what he did, what he knows wasn't wrong, identified it. So there's a lesson learned. He's mm-hmm. being public about it and he's moved on and updated security.
Good.
Exactly what we love to see. So we're all happy about that. Mycroft, we talked about that several months ago. Mycroft is the mm-hmm. open source implementation of a voice command for your office or home, any automation stuff. So Mycroft is the, and we remember we had the debate
IoT?
About. Yeah, it's a, mm-hmm. so you can show your IoT devices, and because it's an open platform, you can develop upon it, and they have this cool little box with a speaker in it that
okay.
you talk to. Hey, Mycroft, or whatever they're going to say to it, and then it can talk back to you and look up information. They are going to be shipping it based on a Raspberry Pi 3.
Wow.
So there's your first Raspberry Pi 3 project.
Okay.
And they also joined.
I'm not connecting anything to the internet in my house except for my computers.
Oh, come on. We need more listening devices in our house.
Yeah, that Comcast remote that you can speak to.
Exactly.
Oh, man. I tell you, people are dumb. They just. They'll just put all that stuff in there.
I admit, I got an Amazon Fire and you can talk to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really disappointed. If it didn't crash, it's crashed twice on me for no particular reason. So I don't think it's a good listening device. I've had to reboot it twice now. And we've only had it in a month. Anyways, okay. So Mycroft also joined the Techstars Tech Accelerator program.
Mm-hmm.
So they got picked up by them, and they're doing some code sprint to really beef this up and
mm-hmm.
Create an open source competitor for things like Amazon Echo or any of the other, you know, listening devices that we put in our house. So, but either way, it's a pretty cool project.
Excellent.
Open source electrocardiography, the heart monitor.
Cardiography.
There is a project.
Excellent, Tony.
Yes, there is a project on GitHub for this. It's called the
to build your own electrocardiogram machine.
Yes, it is. It's called mobile ECG. And we'd actually talked about this at our last, if you remember, she happened to be an open source developer, and I want to say she's a kernel contributor, and she made the assumption that her pacemaker would adapt to changes in her life, which specifically being pregnant, and it did not and almost killed her.
Oh, and okay.
This was mm-hmm. a point of, I can't look at the code that drives the thing that saves my life.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, if I had the ability to, you know, it could be examined, it could be looked at, but it's all proprietary, mm-hmm. closed source, and they had a code flaw that almost killed her and a device that's supposed to save her.
Wow.
So it was, you know, it's a lot to think about. So there's a push to create more open source medical devices. I know, mm-hmm. At Adafruit Industries, there's a couple people working on a project for open source, diabetes monitoring and things like that.
Okay.
So, cause one, the margins are absolutely astronomical on a lot of these medical devices. But being open source would allow people to tinker with and kind of start building your own devices and be able to monitor things themselves and understand, themselves. So mm-hmm. this is a really cool project. He has some of the information. I think they're putting together a Kickstarter for some of the hardware, but it's going to be very affordable. So if you just want to do your own heart monitoring, you can.
There you go. Wow.
So it's a pretty neat project. I'm going to dig more into it to see what other open source medical projects there are, because I think this could be, there's probably a lot of work going on individually in those communities, for doing that. I know my friend who's a Linux programmer and a diabetic has been watching the ones that are going on mm-hmm. over at Adafruit Industries, because they're actually developing the hardware, for better monitoring, because he has the diabetic pump and he says he needs closed source. I don't know what goes on inside this box.
Yeah.
You know, so what if there's a code flaw? I load code and I'd like to examine it.
You know, for that cardio one, then you'd need some kind of a cutout so you know where to put the leads, because I've gone through that process and there's like 7 things that are attached to you in various locations so that they can.
He has that in the demonstration. Their website's actually really well done with a demonstration of how the ideas would work, and whatnot. So it's really cool. It's not just like an idea. It's mm-hmm. in active development, which is pretty cool.
All right.
The last thing is the Federal Election Commission has a massive archive.
FERC.
Yeah. they have a campaign finance data archive. This goes back to 1980. So you can find out who donated what all the way back to 1980 to who. So who's funding who?
So you could find out if Donald Trump did donate to Hillary Clinton in 2008?
Yes, you can.
Huh.
Now, what makes this even more fun and why I'm even talking about it here is if you go to GitHub/data_FEC_individual_donors, they created a series of command line scripts that will help parse and organize the data so you can create things of this.
Really?
So, yes, they've already had a lot of comments of people using it because, I mean, the government mm-hmm. presented the data, but they did not do anything useful correlations for it. But at least the data is there.
Well, you know, that reminds me of when I had to request, I had done some work on some tech work on some little political campaigns and some other things, and I had to request data of all the list of registered voters. So you'd think that you'd get a nice text delimited. Mm-hmm. No, it was what it was an excerpt from an Oracle database that was that I had to take and then
parse and
mm-hmm. do some stuff with in order to make it really useful.
And that's essentially what they've done is they've made the data available, but it's not in mm-hmm. a useful format. So someone wrote a series of command line scripts that will grab and organize the data into. They have different ways. They have a whole series of like options to help parallelize the data and parse it to mm-hmm. usable formats for you then to do presentations. So I think that's really cool. And being able to just to hand it to people. So you got a lot of students that are, they have some type of project or like data is a big problem. They knew exactly how to format it, but then how do I acquire, you know, a million records of data so I can draw correlations between this? Well, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
And so I might even play with it because I'm a big fan of the Google Docs system because of the way you can manipulate massive data sets inside of it with a series of scripts.
Now, is it using a NoSQL database type?
When you do it in Google, they have their own language. I think it's a modified version of Go. It's very similar to Java.
And it just queries the set. You don't have to build a database because that's what I always did is I'd, you know, do the table. Well, it was actually just one table. And then I'd pull stuff out of it.
Yeah. XUC commands. Yeah. You can do some of this with the Google Docs stuff.
Okay.
Because Google Docs, because it's a web enabled, you mm-hmm. can also, cite web enabled data sources to help correlate and pull this in. So I'm going to look at some of the parsers. Cool. If I have time, I might just play with it because it looks fun.
Yeah. That does sound kind of fun.
And I'll find some weird statistics that I can draw.
I'll be interested to hear how that goes.
Yeah. So it's one of those one more times to do list, but I don't know. It looks like something fun.
Okay.
Right. It does sound pretty cool. Yeah.
All right there, Mr. T over there. Well, Mr. T Tony.
Right. You know, I found one more article. I didn't get to read through it. I wanted to read through it before I talked a whole lot about it, but one's called.
Okay. We'll wait for you.
I can talk about it next time we get to it. I can do kind of a deep dive into it.
All right.
But it's Verizon's Data Breach Digest Report. So, sounds kind of interesting.
That should be interesting reading.
Yeah, the tease is something about e-pirates help real-life pirates or something like that.
Oh, okay.
So, it sounds interesting.
Okay.
And the other thing is the links I posted this week is mm-hmm. actually to the SANS.org news page.
Okay.
And what it does is it gives you a little snippet about the articles or about the topic. Mm-hmm. And then it gives you like 3 different articles that mm-hmm. talk about that topic.
Okay.
So if you want to know more info than just one source, then it gives you multiple mm-hmm. sources.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The e-pirates help I like the way that it was actually titled. It says, from the high seas to the high tech. What they had done was they had pilfered shipping routes. They'd used that to determine where the ships would be and hack some of their data. I didn't get all in deep of it, but it's like some social engineering, things like that. But basically they could put together all the information of where they would know where the boats would be. Yeah. So instead of having to do what seems like a low tech, if anyone's watched, what's that movie with Tom Hanks, where the boat gets taken over? They're pretty low tech. Oh, yeah.
Captain Phillips.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a pretty low tech. They live for a boat. They go attack boat. You know, it's not.
Right.
And I guess they get stepped up into the century of, hey, guess what? I bet those where the boat's going is probably published somewhere.
Yeah.
And they were able to acquire that information by hacking. They said they hacked the company shipping systems. I doubt it was a big hack because it's probably just one of those. We didn't think to guard it enough as a secret. It's like the guy who faxed himself out of prison at one time before they closed that loophole.
Oh, I remember.
His friend went down to Kroger's and faxed a transfer order, and his friend showed up in what looked like a sheriff's car and picked him up.
Really? Oh, cow.
He faxed himself out of prison. If anyone's curious, don't try it. You'll just get arrested. Yeah. Or do try it because you're someone who should
be
arrested.
You can do it once, but
the
authorities
joke's over.
Hopefully catch on. All right. So what else we got?
That's all I saw.
Okay. I have actually a couple of quick KDE Corner items. I just wanted to mention that PZIP 6.0 was released a couple weeks ago. PZIP, of course, is the archive zipping utility, that really works very well. Also, I wanted to mention that, KEncFS, that flows off the tongue. It's a graphical front end for encrypted.
Oh yeah, the EncryptFS.
Yeah, it's a graphical front end for it. That was just released a couple of weeks ago, and then also apparently they're going to be doing a KDE Plasma sprint at CERN. So they were talking about new plasma generators coming to CERN, which is kind of a play on words, which I thought was kind of funny.
I like it.
Yep. And then Area 51 repository, which is the KDE and FreeBSD repository, they just updated the Plasma to 5.6 beta, and then also their KDE frameworks was just updated to 4.14.9, which I think is beyond what the KDE project is releasing. I think they've got some other little customizations in there. So, and that really is what I've got for the KDE Corner.
All right. Thank you, Mary.
Hey, you're welcome.
All right. just another plug that we're all be at PenguinCon this year. We'll be doing a recording in the Podcast Detroit suite. Which,
and that's different than what we've done in the past.
Right. In the past, we've been in one of the convention presentation halls.
At 7 in the morning.
Right.
Having to set up the whole thing and tear it down.
Yeah. So what we need to do is we make flyers, tell everybody where we're going to be Sunday morning. Yeah.
I can help with that.
Sweet. We're going to have ribbons. I'm doing a separate presentation on, I think we talked about this last time, but on,
something.
Security.
Something.
I don't know.
Security for the
leggy. And you're still working on your, still working on your slides, I bet, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah, and I did reserve our spot. I don't know if you've seen, they had a posting to reserve it. And, Dave let me know that no one else is reserving it for 8 a.m. on Sunday. Right. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Excellent.
Yeah. So we'll be there. And there'll be,
Are there chairs in that area to watch?
I would believe so. You're going to be broadcasting all weekend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can come in, hang out with us, and then it'll be a more intimate area.
you were talking to the audience.
The audience, yeah.
And I thought you meant I could hang out with you. All right.
Right. The nice thing that about not being in a in one of the presentation halls is that it's being in a suite, which is actually just like a hotel room or one of the hotel suites. I'm not sure which one they got.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we can have beer. We can have. And you don't have to have a pass for the convention if you want to come and see us.
Oh,
that's
good.
So you can just
want to get up early on Sunday. on right. Sunday morning and listen
yeah,
to a
you don't have to
review of Linux.
I recommend going to a convention if you, it's a fun time, mm-hmm. but if you're not into the convention scene, you're like, I don't like people, but I like these guys on Sunday morning Linux review, you can just come to the suite and hang out with us.
That's right.
Yeah. And what is that, May 1st?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
It is. Yep. May 1st.
Okay.
At 7 a.m. in Southfield, Michigan.
7 a.m.? I thought it was 8.
Sure. 8 a.m. Sorry.
All right.
Me and Tony are staying. Are you staying at the hotel?
I'm not.
Okay. I am. I'll be at the hotel, so I will be there. Hmm. I may or may not have gone to sleep, depending on how Saturday night goes.
Right. All right. Well, okay. Well, that's good.
But I will be there.
All right.
Well.
I think we're going on to our outro music.
The outgoing music for this week's show.
And what's coming up before our next show is St. Patrick's Day. So
yes.
I found some.
The wearing all the green.
Right.
And the drinking all the beer.
What do you do with the cantaloupe? What do you do with the cantaloupe? What do you do with the cantaloupe? Early in the morning.
Hey, way, and if she was this, hey, way, and if she was this, hey, way, and if she was this, early in the morning.
Shine is better when it's left to water, shine is better when it's left to water, shine is better when it's left to water, early in the morning.
Hey, way, and if she was this, hey, way, and if she was this, hey, way, and if she was this, early in the morning.
But I'm always got the water, but I'm always. But I'm the oldest couple of the early in the morning.
Hey, way, and she was this, hey, way, and she was this, hey, way, and she was this early in the morning.
What do you do with the cantaloupe? What do you do with the cantaloupe? What do you do with the cantaloupe early in the morning?
Hey, way, and she was this, hey, way, and she was this, hey, way, and she was this early in the morning.
Put him in the back of the body, bargain, put him in the back of the body, bargain, put him in the back of the body, bargain, early in the morning.
Hey, way, and if she was this, hey, way, and if she was this, hey, way, and if she was this, early in the morning.
What do you do with the cancello? What do you do with the cancello? What do you do with the cancello? Early in the morning.
Hey, what? And if she was this, hey, what? And if she was this, hey, what? And if she was this, early in the morning. Shake it, man, with the sea water. Shake it, man, with the sea water. Shake it, man, with the sea water. Early in the morning. Hey, what? And if she was this, hey, what? And if she was this, hey, what? And if she was this, early in the morning.
All right, so you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 183.
New March. March,
yeah. This is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show at smlr.us. Or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Kay Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
The Linux Link Tech Show, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast. On the web, www.tllts.org. By email, techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC channel, thelinuxlink.net, port 6667/ Tech Show. And Flying Rich is so hot.